Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. This is Howell without Jamie and Matt. Every so often on the Box Set Pod, I get rid of the driftwood that I have to put up with every week and do an episode where I talk in amazing, in-depth, planned precision, well-researched, with somebody who I have simply stumbled across in some strange way. And this has included the ex-vice president of Walt Disney World Resorts, Lee Cockerell, and comedian Justin Lee Collins, and this time it's a woman I met on holiday. Molly Malone. What a great name. Is that your real name? Is it that you watched a lot of Father Ted, perhaps, and was inspired by the Irish?
No, I was born with that name. My parents were good Catholic people, and they're supposed to have seven children: Molly, Polly, Dolly, Huey, Dewey, Louie, and Peter, because she'd be all petered out by then. But they just had me.
I'll just give a quick back. Molly was my tour guide when we went on the Warner Brothers studio tour in Hollywood, and the first thing you may notice about Molly is that she sounds exactly like Ellen to my foreign ears. Molly, you can tell me who you think I sound like if you like later. We've done the tour three times now, and the guides are always great. Molly was the best. She was brilliant, and I just thought, I have to get Molly on the podcast to talk. Where were you born? How did you get to LA? What's the story?
So I was born in Phoenix, Arizona, and lived there majority of my life, and then met a woman who is now my wife, and we moved out to California for her to go to grad school at California Institute of the Arts, which is where Pixar started.
Whoa. That is a grad school offer that you have to accept.
Right, yeah. And I never thought in all my years I would live in LA, move to California ever, but
really,
love brought me here, and we found a happy home, and I love it now.
Why didn't you think you would ever move to LA? What was your perception of it, and how does it live up to that perception?
Hearing about it as a kid, it was like, you know, the big city where, you know, very Hollywood, very kind of glitz and glam, but also there is this seedy underbelly. And so it never really appealed to me.
And how similar is it to that description?
it does have a Hollywood aspect. It's quite funny. Like some days, like, oh yes, this is very Hollywood, because I don't live in the town of LA. I live north of it.
Okay.
But you'll see signs all over of where they're just shooting. Like, they'll have, you know, extras park over here, and you'll see there's a very specific black and yellow sign that you know, oh, they're filming something over here.
And you just drive to all of those places and try and get in the shots, yeah?
One time I was really tempted to. I was like, oh, this is for the finale of Friday Night Lights, because they usually use a code word, but this time just said Friday. And I was like, oh, I know what that is. And that's how I figured out what these signs were. Oh, I was so tempted to go in there and see.
I didn't know they used code words.
Sometimes they do.
Are they linked? So would Chuck's code word be Intersect Project or something? Did you watch Chuck?
I've watched parts of it, but not not the whole series.
So if it was Dexter, they might call it the serial killer. That's not that good, is it?
Or maybe spelled like cereal, like the morning breakfast food.
Right? Yes, the killer cereal, spelled like the breakfast.
I haven't been able to figure out any of the others. Like right now, near where my wife works, there's one which is just TK242. No idea what that is.
TK242.
Yeah.
Oh, they're just using like a password generator now, aren't they? So that people can't work it out. Wow.
It seems like, although I saw one that was just called Liar, and I was having some issues with my roommate. I'm like, I just want to steal one and pop that on their door.
So you live north of the city and you drive down into it. My experience of LA was the first time we went, I thought it was the most horrendous place that I'd ever been. It was on a foggy day and we went straight to the Walk of Fame and experienced that.
People ask about it. I'm like, it's interesting to go to, but a lot around it.
Yeah. Drive through it. Say that you've been there. Yeah. Drive slowly through it and you've done it. That's fine.
Yeah.
But it was, yeah, that was our experience. It was a smoggy day and we spent 2 days there. And we went to Disney and Disney was awesome, of course. But it was like, okay, we never need to go back to LA again. And I just had this real vision of it kind of, oh, this is where dreams are made, not where dreams exist. And I just felt really sad. And then the second time we went, we actually sort of did more of it, realize what it is, which is this massive just 10 cities in one. And we went to the coast, and if you get to the coast and the sun's out, it's just, you know, there's nowhere else I want to live in the world, having been there. Probably Edinburgh, maybe, other than Edinburgh and LA. Mm. That's it, you know. And so it is, so there is all of that, but isn't that kind of part of its magic, is that it's got its dark side and it's got its dreams and it's got its beach and all of that.
It's true, and there's history, there's like, you know, amazing stories and like terrible stories that you hear. Mm. And yeah, so there's the whole gambit of the city. But yeah, the beaches are always wonderful, always the saving grace of any part of Los Angeles. You just go to the beach, it's fine.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And if you've got a cool 20 million, you could buy a place on the beach. So,
good. Absolutely.
So how long have you been at Warner Brothers doing the tours then? And is that a difficult job to get?
The hiring process was rather rigorous.
Was it?
I started there in June. I saw it online on a hiring website here in the States. And that sounds kind of fun. And so I applied, and like the first thing I called back was like, can you drive a car? Do you have a valid license? Because driving's a big part of it, because we drive all over the lot.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, absolutely. And they're like, okay, we're going to send you some stuff. Fill this out and send it back to us as quickly as we can. That'll reserve a spot. I'm like, okay, sure. And got that all done. They had this massive group interview.
Group interview? Like with the people you're competing with?
Yes, exactly.
Holy shit. That's so and some of you are going to get the job, or one person's going to get the job?
Well, we knew it was we didn't know how many spots were open. And so they had a 9 a.m. interview and a 1 p.m. interview. And so I went to the 1 o'clock, and there were about 80 of us at that interview.
There was two people at the 9 a.m. one.
Quite possibly.
And was this in like a sound stage or something?
Yeah, just in an empty sound stage, yeah.
Whoa. And what did you do?
So there were four parts of it. They told us to prepare two things. So I had to pick any Warner Brothers IP and talk about it for a minute. And then also pick an object that kind of represented ourselves, and we could talk about how it was kind of represent ourselves and how we had similarities to the object.
Okay, and was that from a choice of objects that were in the room, or you just had to...
No, so we could bring anything, but we had to be able to bring it onto the lot, so we couldn't do, like, you know, live animals or, you know, anything too big or...
Guns,
like,
yeah.
Some, yeah, exactly, weapons.
Yeah.
I brought a baseball, so...
Ah, and what? And why are you similar to a baseball, Molly?
Because baseball, people understand what a baseball is. It's traditional... people, it's pretty durable, reliable. Everyone, you know, appreciates the baseball, but inside there is over a mile's worth of thread in there. It's what gives it its width, and so people don't always know there's a lot more on the inside there.
You are hired, Molly. that's brilliant. And was everyone doing this? So are you all taking it in turns to step forward and talk about your object?
Yeah, so they broke us into four groups, so they were able, like, manageable. So still 20 of us, but yeah, we had to go around the circle and talk about our object.
God, I just don't want to be that person who's realized that they forgot to bring their object. Just sounds horrendous.
There was one guy who used a pen. I was like, oh boy, okay, you forgot something else. So a pen, all right.
I have this shoe. So how soon do they? Is it then like a flipping X Factor thing? Are you then, okay, you four, you're staying till this evening, or is that, was that the end of the process?
No, so then we had to, and then we did the, so the Warner Brother IP, I talked about the Wonder Woman movie. But I wanted to do it differently, so I turned it into fantasy terms. So, like, there's a princess who lives in a magical land with all sorts of other people. And, like, I'm like, I was the only person to do anything quite like that. I'm like, oh, I have screwed this up royally, because I wanted to make it sound different than everyone else, and no one else did anything like that. I'm like, oh, okay, not so good, but okay.
And they worked.
It was fine. For the third thing, we had to, they were going to give us a title, and we had to talk about it with our two tour guests, quote, tour guests, other people in the interview process. And if you knew anything about it or not, you just had to kind of BS it for a full minute.
Okay. And what did you get?
I got the TV show called Mom, Allison Janney and Emma.
Oh, yeah, I knew nothing.
I didn't know anything about the show.
No, zero. Oh, my God. So you just BS'd it.
I just BS'd it. I'm like, no, I picked some stars' names and said, yeah, it's about a sitcom, about a mom and her kids, blah, blah, blah. And I think the whole thing was like, can you talk about something you're unsure of, or maybe you do know about it for a minute.
So when you're driving people around the Warner Brothers lot and they say, tell me about Blade Runner 1982, you can say, well, there's this person who works in a barber's and shaves people, and and in his spare time he runs marathons, right? Great. And how many times are you? Do you find yourself actually in that situation when you're doing a tour? Does somebody go, in that episode 12 of season 3 of the Gilmore Girls, as you know, Luke falls through the window. Is this the spot he landed? That's every tour, isn't it? That's once every tour.
Thank heavens it's not, but every now and then I get someone who is like, no, is this the thing that happened here? And for sometimes, just to kind of appease them, I'm like, sure, yeah. you nailed it. You know exactly where you're looking.
Yes. Yeah, as I remember on our tour, there was a guy, I think, on the front who was, it was someone who interrupted you while you were mid-paragraph. And yeah. And it's like, whoa, that's a step too far, sir. Have you had people leap off the bus and just go and...
I have not, but one of my trainers, he's like, yeah, he has had every horrible thing happen to him on tour. He had a woman jump off the cart and go and hug a star. She, one of the stars of ER, she saw him walking down the street. She literally hopped off the moving cart to hug him.
Brilliant. And I imagine he was good about it.
Oh, yeah. He's the best at keeping his cool with whatever situation he gets. He taught us this, you know. How I react is how the rest of the cart is going to react. Even if I, you know, crash into Ellen, he's cool about it, and no one else will freak out. So,
oh God! So there are lots of things. There are thousands of things that anyone listening to this has seen filmed at Warner Brothers in the last 10 years. I did discover the Gilmore Girls, and I can't tell you how much I adore that writing and that series, even with its occasional flaws. Adore it. There are loads of things that have been filmed there, ranging from the Gilmore Girls all the way Friends, classic Jimmy Stewart and John Wayne, and Ellen is filmed there. All the Friends was filmed there. The West Wing was filmed there. Chuck. So Molly's asked about them all. She's asked every day about all of these things. Is there stuff that you wish you could talk about more and you don't?
I mean, the show, the Warner Brothers show I especially love is ER. It went through a whole metamorphosis over the 15 years that it filmed. And I don't often get a lot of ER fans on my tours, because it started the same time as Friends. And Friends, they had their 25th anniversary this year, or last year. Same age as Friends.
No way. So it's so the West Wing, Friends, and ER, and the Gilmore Girls were all going on at the same time there.
Mm-hmm. It's good time for TV.
Jeez, yeah. And a busy canteen, I would imagine.
Right, yeah.
Wow. How old were you when ER came out?
Oh, you're going to make it hard on me now.
Teenager?
I was in high school.
Yeah, me too.
When ER came out.
It was just the you know the bit in the credits, the when the piano comes in, the little crescendo, and the, and mm-hmm. Peter. Yep. It was Peter Benk, not Benkman. That's goes.
Benton.
Peter Benton. He does the fist bump into the ground. Mm-hmm. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, uh-huh. It sends shivers down my spine just listening to that reconstruction that we just heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And it was beautiful.
Thanks. It's it really was. It was a special time, wasn't it? And they did the live episode,
which was crazy because they had. I have a friend who still works there, but she was on the lot when they filmed that episode, and it was crazy. They had camera crews everywhere, running all over to get everything continuously going because they used about at least 5 different sound stages for that show.
Wow. And was there any point in doing it live? Do you think? Did it add anything?
I don't know that it did. Just to kind of show that they could, maybe. Yeah. It's
an event, isn't it? But then when the West Wing did it, that kind of made more sense because it was the live debates. So there was kind of an excuse to do it. I often wonder when they did. It was American, wasn't it? The live. What did they do last year? Greece live.
Oh yes, Greece. Yeah, that was on our lot too.
Oh, was it? Wow.
Yeah.
That was really impressive. And I thought, you know, there's still an element of it where I'm going, what did you need to do this live? Because we can kind of see the set wobble every so often. But it's so impressive that they're obviously trying to sort of beat the streaming giants and going, hey, look, there's still a reason to listen to, there's still a reason to watch TV.
I mean, I think that's why people watch theater is because it's that element of live that you don't know, anything could go wrong at any time.
Yeah. Do you think people watch theatre?
I do.
I trained as a theatre director, so there's about 12 people a year that go to this a college in London and do a degree in theatre directing. And I'm very passionate about. I went from that and got into radio, and I'm really passionate about theatre. But it doesn't help itself quite often, theatre, and it hasn't been helped. Margaret Thatcher killed theatre. Really?
Why do you say that?
Well, Maggie Thatcher came in and said the arts needs to pay for itself. So she went, okay, commercial model, no public subsidy. So what you got in the 80s and 90s in Britain was this new wave of kind of very... They called it sort of bare bones, and they made it very realistic and gritty, and it was three people on a stage, and you have the minimalist thing. And it's not Waiting for Godot, it's more sort of working class kitchen sink drama type stuff. And and unfortunately, theatre's strength is the same strength as a gig has, you know, as live music has, which is atmosphere. You cannot create atmosphere with TV in the same way that you can when you're immersed in it. And the reason Cirque du Soleil have done so well is because there is not one element of that production, from the music to the ushers showing you in, you know, there's nothing that isn't as good as it possibly can be. Certainly in Britain, I think people have grown up being taken to theatre at school, really bad productions. They just don't have the money to kind of rehearse for very long, or to have, you can almost hear someone pressing play on the tape recorder for the sound effects that can happen, you know. So it's a real shame, and it's with you know, it's with great love that I feel let down by it. But do you, I mean, I suppose you must get kind of pick of the American theatre. LA must be a good stop-off point for most touring stuff.
Yeah, we do have a major theatre called the Pantages here, and all the, like, Hamilton is coming back very soon. Frozen is just there, and I think the Book of Mormon is there right now.
Okay.
Yeah, any major Broadway show, you can go there and see.
Well, they're great examples. The Book of Mormon and Hamilton. I've not seen Hamilton. Matt, who's on this podcast regularly, he's just been in to see Hamilton in London. I'm aware of how good it is. but the Book of Mormon is a great example of something that, you know, it was in Manchester for a long run recently, and I went 4 times to watch it. And it's just a perfect piece of entertainment.
Yeah, it's just... and you, when you think about who created it, you know, the guys from South Park.
And you have to have that kind of power as well, I think. So unless you've got kind of someone who really understands how to fund creativity, you need to have the ego or the reputation to demand that things are, you know, as good as possible. Most touring theatre can look quite tired quite quickly. And that one, I mean, they were doing that show something like 9 times a week, and they were on point. Every line, everything was just perfect.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to you. Oh, so your wife, how long have you been married for?
So we got married in 2013, so 6 years. It'll be 7 years this year, in October.
2013. That's when me and my wife got married. But the difference was that you were probably only just allowed to get married at that point. Is that?
We had to elope So technically we got married in Seattle in May, and then we had our the wedding for our friends and family on Halloween,
right?
Because it was not legal in Arizona, so we had to go off to another state to officially get it done.
Right.
Arizona was the last to cave. It was through, because under the certain jurisdiction, there's like 9 states, and we were like, Arizona's the last state holding out against gay marriage. And finally, just as a result of everyone else, they're like, no, you have to do it.
So let's segue from that subtly to Ellen, who I believe is also married to a woman and sounds like you. But you've now, so you started working there in June last year, and you've already been promoted to co-hosting the Ellen Show as of next month. Is that correct?
That would be fantastic. I started on Ellen in September, and worked my way up through the ranks. And so now when we tape a show, I help load in the audience, and then during the commercial breaks, I stand up at the top of the house if the audience needs to run to the restroom or anything. That's my exciting job. But it's awesome, though.
So you can tell them, you show them where the bathroom is if it's, the restroom is, if it's mid-show?
During commercials, yeah. Okay. Because when they're taping, I literally sit on a little stairwell behind, so I'm not in the shot.
Right, yeah. So you get to listen to every show being taped.
Yes, and there's a TV in that stairwell too, so I can watch what's happening.
Oh, my favorite thing to do was not direct plays. It was, once it's been directed, to sit somewhere innocuous, maybe in the rafters or under the seats or somewhere no one could see me while the play was happening, and just listen to the reaction and listen to the thing. There is nothing better. You feel like Rizzo the Rat or something, just hiding somewhere in a corner, don't you?
It's awesome. And sometimes I'll have people who will come, who will enter through my stairwell. And so for Valentine's Day, Twitch's wife came to surprise him. Like, all of a sudden, she's in my stairwell. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Let me get out of your way. Because she's going to do a surprise entrance.
Who's been the best kind of bumped into?
I mean, Tom Ellis is a lovely, sweet man.
Tom Ellis?
Yes. He has a show called Lucifer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's an epic show. I believe he was also on a British show called Miranda.
Yeah. Oh, of course. I'm going to be crucified for not knowing that now. Yes. Oh. So he's nice.
Anytime you see him walk past and drive past him, he'll say hey, he'll wave. He hugged one of my tour guide friends, and she just about lost her brain that day. Nathan Fillion, also very nice.
Who is an American-Canadian actor from Suicide Squad. Oh, yeah, yeah. And he was in Firefly, wasn't he? The main guy. Yeah. Great. And Guardians of the Galaxy.
He has a quick little bit in the first one, I believe, in the prison.
Oh, he's cool. Yeah, great. How often do you have a conversation with Ellen herself?
I've yet to meet her, unfortunately.
God, imagine what's going to happen when you meet her, though. And when you hear each other speak, it's going to be like a Marx Brothers mirror trick. Oh, my God. You have been there for not yet a year. You've already been promoted to the Ellen Show. How did you put it? Your job is to, it's almost like you said, cattle herd the humans into Ellen Show.
Yeah, because, so there's a parking garage across the street.
And that's where they're kept.
That's where they line up. And there's 250 people that can come to a taping.
Right.
And so we just have to, usually in groups of 30, sometimes or more, and we just kind of cross them across the street one way, across the street the other way, then into the soundstage.
Okay.
They actually added a special crosswalk for the Ellen show specifically, because previously they would just walk across the street and go through security and slow everything down. So anyone going on the lot through that gate was just boned for the whole time we were loading audience in. So they added this special crosswalk solely for the Ellen show.
And do you stand in front of the crosswalk and wave them all across? Do you ring a cowbell? Or do you have a whistle?
We have those like bright orange traffic wands.
Okay.
And we wear vests. So for a while I'm now the ADA helper, which is like folks with special needs. I help them get across first.
Great.
Before, I stood on a street corner and literally just yelled at people to hurry up and cross the street as I waved my traffic wand.
How often do people actually say, oh, you sound like Ellen?
Usually not when I'm working the show, but more often on tours, I do get it.
Foreign people like me, yeah.
But even in my training group, because we all had to like practice and like learn the lot and learn how to drive and stuff, so we just go out and practice every day. And the first time when people heard me on the mic, they're like, wait, are we being punked?
Yeah.
Is this Ellen right now?
Okay, so back to the crosswalk. So you get everyone across, you're shouting at them. What percentage of them are already drunk before they get there?
I would say very few are drunk, but some people are so excited. Like, the people that play the games on the Ellen show, they pick a bunch of people ahead of time.
Yeah.
So they kind of know who to pick from to play the games.
Okay.
Those people are racing across the street. They will like get into like runner's position and run across.
Once they're in they're in like a holding pen. It's like veal, yeah. And are they delicious?
When you get them in the show, then they're good and they're happy.
And not everybody makes it into the audience, do they? So some people you have to kind of overbook.
They always ensure the audience is full at all times. And so if people don't make it into the soundstage where they film, there's another soundstage called the Riff Rack Room. It's where they can watch the show on monitors in there. So still kind of be a part of it. Not quite the same experience, but they'll be there. And if you're stuck in there, then you get guaranteed tickets to come back and sit in a proper seat for another tape.
And are they generally okay with that?
For the most part.
It's a different scale in America. It's like the biggest thing we've ever seen here would probably be Harry Potter, I would imagine. But the scale of that country and the number of people who might be watching any episode of Ellen and the draw to that. And you're essentially peeing from a pond of like 400 million people and saying, send me your craziest, most enthusiastic people, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, there is a serious amount of potential. I imagine there's a lot of quite careful security, and you really have to think about that stuff. It's almost it's like post Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer was the first sort of explosion of kind of crazy enthusiasm on TV, and then you had Oprah and Ellen's works even better the more enthusiastic people are. Like you were saying about the game show contestants, the more crazy somebody is, the more her deadpan nature can exist and be funny against it.
It's so true. So true.
So you need lunatics. And, and there you are, waving them across the road. What's next? How ambitious are you? I think for people outside of LA, there's an image of what it must be like to live and work in LA. And my experience of LA now is some of the best people in the world with the best intentions, and everyone wants to be on the right side of the right cause whenever whatever's happening right now. They want to be eating the correct avocados, doing the right thing, but they're not the perhaps the image of desperation of the fame. People just roller skating around going, I want to live forever, desperate. And you don't appear to be that. Like a lot of LA people I see just doing stuff, doing cool jobs, who don't reek of desperation.
For me, I don't really feel that. I just want to have a job where I have fun at and can do well and that's what this job has worked out for me to be. It's an awesome job where I meet amazing people like yourself. It's fun, and some days are challenging, of course, but this is what I was about. Mm-hmm. Before, I worked in retail for like far too long, and I'm like, I just need something different to get out of where everyone's mad at me all the time.
Yeah. And what's your wife doing now?
So she had the reverse, and she was kind of the ambitious one, or still is really. Yeah. And she is a theatrical lighting designer.
Ah, cool.
That's what she went to grad school for. And so it was kind of like she was always kind of figuring out what the next gig was, what the next show she was going to do. Yeah. But recently she's gotten a job with a lighting design firm, so it's not as stressful.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to. It's like my short career in theatre was, if you work in theatre, you work at the worst time of day. Like, you're working in the evening every night, you're out of town, everyone's having affairs because they finish work at 11 at night and the towns are all closed down and their energy's through the roof and, you know, so it's kebabs, drink, drugs and affairs, you know. And it's just, you just become more and more distanced from reality, I think. And it is tough. And if you can find jobs, like your job is a dream of a job. Oh, no, there is no such thing as a dream of a job.
But it kind of is. It really kind of is. I work on a movie lot and drive around, talk to people, talk about fun things all day. So even with the LM people, like most, I would say like 95% of them are super excited, super sweet, genuine people who are just ultimately happy to be there.
You find that in everything. I think most people who are lucky enough to work in jobs that they love, most people are really nice. I think in the 15 years that Jamie and I were kind of doing breakfast radio, what do you call it in America? Morning radio.
Oh, morning radio. Yeah, morning radio, yeah.
So we interviewed everyone, but One Direction to Richard Attenborough, most people were wonderful human beings, and there was probably two famous people who weren't wonderful human beings.
Yeah.
But most people really are great. They know how lucky they are and work hard to do something they love.
It's a funny thing to think about because we take it for granted because I'm on the lot every day, but like it's really neat what I do because I'm on this Hollywood lot where they've made all these movies and all these TV shows, and I just have to think, like, no, to a standard person, this is so awesome. And I'm like, yeah, it is. Sometimes I have to remind myself of just how cool my job can be.
It is. How long before you get bored of driving around Stars Hollow?
I don't know. Because, I mean, the place stays the same, but it will update with new things that shoot there. But the people are always different.
Yeah.
So that's another exciting factor. Sometimes it's, you know, a terrible cart with no reaction. Other times everyone's into everything I'm saying. And so,
if there was any way of me recommending to people to go do the Warner Brothers Hollywood tour and ask for Molly, then I would. But I don't think that's actually possible, is it? You can't choose your tour guide.
Typically not. I mean, people give us reviews on TripAdvisor and say, you know, that was awesome. And maybe people see that, but otherwise, I can get, my wife is taking my tours, like, you say you want Molly's tour, but otherwise it's not easy.
Right. Hey, I tell you something else you taught me that I didn't realize, that the, at university, we all had to do a presentation about a director, and this was in the film bit, and everyone was being very wise and picking Scorsese and Spielberg and all this. I chose Jim Henson and told the story of Kermit the Frog through the eyes of the story of Jim Henson, because essentially they're very similar. You took us to the bit which people will have seen in lots of things. There's in the Gilmore Girls, it's whenever you see them in bushes, it's that bit. But this is also a lake that gets filled up, and that was where Kermit sang his first song, The Rainbow Connection, which was sung at our wedding. I couldn't believe it. And let me tell you, you're sitting on the back of your golf cart, there are people saying nothing who are going, oh my God, like it's like life change. It's weird because something that has only ever existed in your imagination is and could mean so much to somebody. They've just fucking driven past it.
Well, and, like, I didn't know that. I never know the connection that people have to certain things.
And that's the beauty of it. What's your favorite bit of the tour?
I mean, the place you're talking about is called the Lagoon. I really like the Lagoon.
Right, because it feels like you're away from the buildings and...
Because, you drive into it in a whole jungle backlot, and the way they've used that for so many different things, I love the capabilities that that thing has, and the history, like, scenes from Camelot were filmed in there.
Really? Oh my God.
Yeah, like, they did the Lusty Month of May in that same area. So it's like, just all the different things that have been in that area, and because it's not a typified city block or, you know, New York-looking street. I love that whole area.
It's a weird thing when once you've done that tour. Just last night I watched Road to Perdition and then put an episode of Chuck on and saw the same set on both of them. You really notice it. Like, to the point that you're going, how did I ever not think that that was a set?
Right? I can't watch TV the same way now because I'm constantly looking to see, I'm like, oh, is that? Yep, well, that's out over there. And Rose is like, stop it. Please just watch.
Are you tour guiding on everything that you...
I'm like, oh, yeah, this is here. I'll, like, pause it. It's like, right. And she's so good to put up with me that way.
Yeah. She's just about to burst into tears at something, and you go, well, this is actually the place that Spider-Man hung upside down. Is there anything that you feel that we haven't talked about that you expected me to ask you?
No, this was lovely.
Good. Let's do it more often. Oh, it's a pleasure. Molly. Oh, I'll tell you what I didn't ask you. Flipping heck. So along the lines of marriage, before you worked on Ellen, how much of an influence has Ellen been in your life? I'm just presuming that because you're a gay woman, you have held Ellen up on a pedestal your entire life. Is that true?
Oh, it is true. It's funny. We joke that she's our queen. But even when I was like in high school and I hadn't quite figured my whole self out yet, I bought her book and just read it. And I read it like 6 times.
Oh,
just,
wow.
Like, devoured it, and then I got her next book and read the same thing. So I'm like, and I watched her sitcom, and so, like, just kind of growing up, and she was a huge influence in my entire life.
So her book, was that a book that she wrote after she came out or before she came out?
It was before she came out.
Okay, so before you even knew that you had that in common,
right.
And before she dropped that bombshell. Yeah.
Right.
Wow. What's the title of the stand-up she just did for Netflix?
Oh, Relatable.
Oh, my God. I mean, not only about the Book of Mormon, talk about perfect theatre. I mean, it is perfect. It's perfect prose for the whole thing, isn't it? But that story, I mean, the amount that she was shat on from a great height.
I didn't realize the extent of everything that she'd gone through, and there's a big poster in her backstage area for that comedy special, and underneath it just says she's not using her daytime voice.
Yeah, definitely. She just seems like the perfect human being. If some big story comes out about Ellen at some point, that just that'll be the end of celebrity and, you know, as we know it.
So, yeah.
She's just lovely.
Yeah.
As are you, Molly. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Howell.
Pleasure. And you pronounced my name correctly. That's weird.
Names are very important to me, so.
Yeah. Thank you, Molly.
No, thank you again.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.